This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
Survivor 48 is here, and alongside it, we're bringing you a brand new season of On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast. If you're a Survivor super fan, you won't want to miss this deep dive into every episode where we break down how we designed the game, the biggest moves, your burning questions. It's the only podcast that gives you inside access to Survivor that nobody else can. Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast with me, Jeff Probst, every Wednesday after the show, wherever you get your podcasts.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. Always fun to talk to our guy, Bruce Levine. But to do so on opening day or night is a joy. And Bruce joins us now on the Aturo Tire Hotline. Aturo, new tires for spring. Check them out, Aturo.com. Bruce, good morning. How are you, buddy?
Good morning, guys. Best day of the year. I think the second best day is when the Super Bowl, the next day after the Super Bowl when baseball starts. But, where do you guys want to begin today?
Well, we can begin wherever you want. We talked about our own predictions for the victory totals for the Cubs and Sox, and we were very similar for the Cubs and maybe a little bit different for the Sox. You look at Vegas, and I think Circa has the Cubs 86.5 and the Sox at 54. What say you, old baseball expert?
I would say the Cubs are an 88 win team this year.
Come on, buddy. That's it.
And that's what I think, and I think it's good enough to win that division. More importantly, winning the division rather than hoping to get in as a wild card, I think that's the key to the season for them. You know, a lot of the prognosticators are not looking at anyone else in the division as really a challenge for the Cubs. With Milwaukee having lost Adames and Williams to the stars of that team, and the fact that Cincinnati has not done enough in the eyes of people that watch the game, Cubs are being predicted to win, you know, by six or seven games in a lot of areas.
And the White Sox, I mean, it's opening day for them. And I don't want to be negative. I am avoiding it. I'm very happy and upbeat. But we're relying essentially on the new manager turning this team into a good fielding team, turning this team into a team that isn't going to be making a lot of mistakes. And that will change their fortunes because, obviously, they had some horrible things last year.
Yeah, you know, you're going to have to prove to me that up-the-middle defense is going to be really good, okay? We know Luis Robert in center. Shortstop and second base, you know, we're still waiting to see exactly how that's going to shake out. You know, Corey Lee was a good catcher last year, improving young catcher, but That's the key to any defense is what those positions are going to look like, how many games those guys are going to be able to start, and whether they're going to hit enough to stay in the lineup. So, you know, outside of Robert, there's an awful lot to prove there, both offensively and defensively. That's why, you know, if the White Sox improve by 11 games, which I have them around 110 losses, it's going to be a good year. But, you know, how many fans are going to go out and look at it and say, yeah, this is a much improved team?
Yeah, that's the reality, Bruce. I think you're exactly right. I also think that Chris Getz sounds like he's a general manager who understands how hard the reality will be.
Right.
I don't know how that manifests itself and how it affects his day-to-day operation or looking long-term or short-term, Bruce, but it did sound like when he spoke yesterday that Chris Getz knows he's in for a very steep climb.
No doubt about it. And, you know, you're not going to get help with expensive free agents. It's not just going to be a part of this equation right now. It might be, you know, 2 years from now when they start to build this team up to where they think it's going to be. But right now he has to do without that. So, you know, with that in mind, you're bringing in a lot of marginal veterans, you know, to try to help you to win, you know, all due respect to, you know, the Mike Tauchmans and the Martin Perez. I mean, those are really good players, you know, but, you know, at this point in time, are they starting players on really good teams? I think they're going to be help. You know, guys like that are going to help a team win like the White Sox, but, you know, not to the point where it's going to be impactful to get them under 100 wins, I believe.
Bruce, I read somewhere that obviously this is the 20-year anniversary, that the White Sox payroll right now is about $58 million. It's below $60 million. When they won the World Series 20 years ago, it was about $75 million. I know about inflation, but that there's no way that's correct.
Well, I'm told that the daytime, you know, host at Score, I believe that the entire, you know, group is making more than the White Sox. You know,
no, I think you're confusing us with Juan Soto.
Juan Soto makes just $10 million less than the White Sox entire team.
No. Yeah. Maybe my analogy is off a little bit, just a tad.
But who's, you know, in charge of that? I mean, don't you need to actually get some players 20 years after the fact?
Who's in charge of it? Well, they drew 1.38 million people last year, the lowest that they drew since 1999. It's not the fans' fault, you know, certainly, but, you know, when you're bringing in that little money, you're what is your TV revenue look like? Can you tell me that? Is the deal with Comcast done today? Are they going to be getting, you know, those 1.3 or 4 million viewers on Comcast back? How much is that going to be when they do get them back? So the revenues are small, and, you know, concurrently, you know, the payroll has to be the same way.
Join Marshall Harris and Layla Rahimi today at Wings and Rings on Halsted as they broadcast live from 10 to 2 before the White Sox home opener, all brought to you by Yuengling, America's oldest brewery. All right, Bruce, let's switch to Cubs for a moment. We had asked a good question before the break, and I had said that Matt Shaw, you've got to have patience with him if he starts slow. You've got to be able to give him time to adjust and adapt. Even if Gage Workman is there, I wonder how patient the Cubs will be. What do you think is the right approach with Matt Shaw, and how patient will the Cubs be?
I think the Ryan Sandberg approach. So go back to 1982, Ryan Sandberg, an unknown coming over from Philadelphia. The Cubs put him at third base, and he starts the year 1-for-30, right? So, you know, a rookie going 1-for-30, you know, the look at him was, well, can he play the position? Yeah, he can play the position. So the patience that you have to show, that you showed for Sandberg 43 years ago, you're going to have to show the same type of patience for Matt Shaw. He's your number one prospect coming from the minor leagues. He's come up quickly. Everybody in baseball thinks he's going to hit. Accomplishing the goal of being a good third baseman is something he's worked hard at this spring. You know, it's relatively a new position for him. So you will have to be patient. And look, you lived with Morrell last year, learning the position every day on the fly. I think you have to live with Shaw as well. They believe in him, and you're going to have to give him a lot of latitude. What does that look like? Is that a month? Is that 2 months? You know, will they platoon him if he's not getting the job done? those are things that we'll be watching.
Yeah, I think that it's a very important part of their team, you know, that the young guys. We talked about it earlier. I think PCA is different than those guys because he did prove something toward the end of last year. But, man, it's going to be beautiful when he ascends to the leadoff spot, don't you think? And it feels inevitable because I'm not sure I'm sure he can do it. I'm not sure he'd want to do it, and I'm not sure that's the right choice. So I'd like to see, as David has said before, PCA moving up in that lineup. And, you know, again, he's got to prove something, but, man, he's a chaos creator.
So evidently he doesn't have to prove anything to you, me, or David, right? At this point, it's all Craig Counsell about, hey, can
And
can
what does he know out? Compared to the three of us?
Not enough. not enough. But you know, the reality is that until he's getting on base at a, let's say, 340, 350 clip, I don't think that, you know, Counsell is going to relent. I mean, he's had this discussion with us media types for the last year about what's it going to take for PCA to be up there. And, you know, he's frank about it. He has to get on base more. He has to slug more. He has to have better at-bats, right? What does that look like? Sometimes we've watched him strike out on three pitches. Other times we've seen him lost at the plate. He looks like a newer version of himself from like August on last year, and in spring training, there was no question him and Workman were the top hitters in spring training, if you put any credence into that whatsoever. So he was a very confident player. If you look at his minor league career, everywhere that Pete Crow Armstrong started, he struggled initially, and then eventually he was a dominant player in all of those leagues. I would say that if anybody has a chance to become a superstar on the Cubs, it's probably not Matt Shaw. It's probably Pete Crow Armstrong.
I find that interesting.
Interesting, yeah.
Yeah, I don't disagree initially. I usually have an instinctive response to your declarations, Bruce, but that one is maybe one I might find compelling enough to agree with.
Look, maybe think, all the Bruce. Elements. Yeah. First of all, is there a better center fielder in baseball right now than Pete Crow Armstrong?
Yeah.
Once he gets his, you know, he said the one area he had to improve in, and Counsell agreed in spring training, when he gets to a ball, regardless of how great, how long of a run he's had and how great a catch it is, he's got to hold on to it.
Mm-hmm.
He mentioned there were six or seven times last year where he got to a ball and he didn't hold on to it, and that has to change. Spring training, he's looked really good so far on that. I mean, he has all the elements. They shut him down in September somehow to running. He was on pace, you know, to be, you know, the type of guy that can steal 60, 70 bases. I think easily if he's in that situation and Counsell wants him to run, that's who he is. So the other element is the hit tool, on base tool. We already saw a surprising power tool. I think a lot of people would be shocked to hear that he hit 10 home runs last year,
right,
in somewhat limited amount of at-bats, and a lot of them came toward the end of the year. So I think the sky is the limit for PCA.
Bruce, we had fun earlier in the show talking about how anonymous the White Sox bullpen has become and trying to see how many names Dustin could come up with, the guys that aren't named Mike Clevinger. Tell us about one or two of them that the White Sox really believe in that might not be guys whose name we do recognize, and they might be used as early as today. Sean Burke will be the starter, but you really don't think he'll go deep into the game, so the game will be turned over to this rather anonymous bullpen.
I think Bobby Thigpen has a really good chance to be a... I mean, you know, it's a real challenge. I mean, Clevinger is being picked out right now as a probable closer. You know, you have Leisure in there that, you know, people have seen before, right? So there's a few names there. The question I'm going to have for Chris Getz and for Will Venable today is, after the five starters go, where who else do you have? I mean, people are going to get hurt. Every general manager tells you they're going to need somewhere between 8 and 10 starters during a baseball season. So what happens if somebody goes down with a hamstring the first week? Who's the first pitcher coming up from the minor leagues? So right. the bullpen is a mystery, and people will eventually come out of that. But the reality of having locked down guys back there, I can't tell you how that's going to work.
Leisure seems well suited for a big one. Sorry,
nice. I love that.
You still have one of those, don't you?
Yeah. I just wear it. I just wear it when I dance at home. So, Bruce, I got to go back to the Sox because I mean this is crazy. But we talked to Stoney, and he was talking about various players who have something to prove and overcome. And Andrew Benintendi, he's come back earlier than we expected. He had this injury. I think he's got some pride. He's the richest free agent in White Sox history, and he was a negative WAR player a year ago. So what is it going to look like? He won't be able to play the outfield, I'm guessing, right? He'll kind of be the DH. How long does that go, and when are we going to see him healthy, and can he earn the money he's getting paid? I think he makes 17 this year.
Yeah, I think he can. If you look at his last 2 months of last year, it was pretty good. And he changed his batting stance, okay? So he went away from the big leg kick, and he's doing a toe tap instead, which has helped him get to the ball quicker and hitting the ball with more authority. The guy has surprising power. He really does. I think he hit 20 home runs last year, even in a really bad season. So I think that he is a really important part of the White Sox offense, especially because he's a left-handed hitter. You know, you have Vaughn and you have Robert, the right-handed guys that can supply some power to the team. But Benintendi is a really essential part to, you know, winning more of those games, you know, getting you back to some more credibility out on the field there. That I think that's a key. But, when you look at, you know, at the White Sox offense, you know, you have to start projecting Montgomery in there somewhere, right? Somewhere in early May. If you're really a hopeful White Sox fan, that's the key to the 2025 season for them is, you know, Madroth and Montgomery, the other Montgomery moving up the chain in the minor leagues as well, the center fielder that they got from Boston. So that's what you want to look at. I mean, are you going to be watching more Birmingham TV than you are White Sox TV? A lot of people will be interested. I think CHSN is going to do a good job of bringing you the minor leagues as they can. You know, so from that perspective, I think that's where the hope is for the White Sox.
Bruce, are we just to assume that Nico Hoerner will start opening day and pick up where he left off and the injury is a thing of the past? Or is there a ramp-up period that he's going to have to go through? Because really, we didn't see much of him this spring.
He's worked hard here this last month playing games. So I think he's pretty close to being able to play every day as far as durability goes. I think he picks up where he left off. You know, I think he's one of the most underrated players in baseball. I don't know how you guys look at him. But even on his team, I think that initially when Council came in, he didn't really have as high a value for him as maybe we all looked at before. If you remember, this is a guy that used to bat second, you know, sometimes lead off. A consistent 30 base stealer, one of the best second basemen defensively in the game. Hard to strike out, had the most hits by the Cubs last year, played the most games. I think underrated because we heard all winter that the Cubs were going to try to trade him, that they had duplications in their organization. I don't think that it's that easy. I think he's a really good player that, you know, has been overlooked a little bit.
Great stuff, Bruce. Very exciting stuff. Opening day or opening night, I guess, in the Cubs case. Fun.
Thanks, Bruce.
Guys, enjoy. Take care.